changed.
Okay, I'd like to call the meeting to order of the Electric Energy Task Force. I'd like to welcome everybody here today for the first meeting of the interim. We don't have a full complement of board members here yet, but or task force members here yet, but they will trickle in as the meeting progresses. The purpose of the meeting today is to have a presentation of the Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group's report from all of their meetings last year and the recommendations that they are presenting to us. And we have with us today Edward Garvey, Director of the Office of Energy Security, and David Thornton, Assistant Commissioner of the Pollution Control Agency. So at this time, I'd like to turn it over to you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Edward Garvey, Director of the Office of Energy Security, and with me is David Thornton, Assistant Commissioner. We're having minor technical difficulties, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Do you need time?
Well, Ginny's on the way to fix it. It appears that the flash drive, which we have a presentation for you, is not fitting in, and we need an extension.
Okay.
So we can either
help is on the way.
Help may be on the way, or I can just serve.
Well, we can take a minor break here.
In the meantime, Madam Chair, you have a...
Yes.
Oh. How do you know that?
Extender. Madam Chair.
Fine, how are you?
Members of the committee, you have a full... We'll call it the partial report, final report from the Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group. It's partial because it doesn't include the appendices. The appendices, while this document is a rather long document in and of itself, the appendices is another 2 or 3 inches worth of material. In addition, you have a the audience, I brought copies. We tried not to make too many copies because it is in color and it is expensive, and we don't want it to be the reports to be wasted. So we did make copies of the executive summary. The presentation that Mr. Thornton and I will provide basically comes from the executive summary, where we walk you through the findings. In many respects, these things have been gone over the last sort of 6 to 8 months, but it is probably beneficial to have the presentation and sort of walk you through it in a sort of a more granular, robust way with the presentation.
Okay.
So. Do you want to wait till we proceed, or...
He's
coming
with
an
proceed. You could proceed.
Proceed, all right.
We can wait. Your PowerPoint isn't ready yet, is that
well,
right?
Well, we're waiting for just an extension for the flash drive to fit in.
Okay, we'll wait for that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
It will make it easier. Any comments by task force members at this time, or... Representative Beard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. While we're waiting, is it okay to jump in?
You get it.
Number 3.
On the agenda.
Yes.
Some of us have to leave promptly at noon.
Okay.
Senator Tomasoni and I introduced legislation to be discussed in front of the Energy Committee during session regarding a possible moratorium on using natural gas to generate electricity going forward in the state. I have an outstanding witness to speak to that issue, and I'd like committee time, probably in this setting. I think Chairman Hilty recommended that we wait for LEETF time and budget, frankly, to bring this gentleman here from Washington to explore what we think is a very important topic. The cost of natural gas, of course, is not going down. It's exceeding even the wildest projections of a couple years ago, And it seems that we continue to have certificates of need for peaking plants and intermediate plants that are fired by natural gas. And I think this committee's purview would include a discussion of what we're doing there and what it means to the economy and what it means to our success of the grid. So I'd like to just suggest that we consider that House and Senate file. Obviously, we're not going to be able to pass anything this year, but for informational purposes in particular, I think it would be well worth the time of this committee to engage in that discussion. And I know I have good friends in the natural gas industry that would like to present their side of the story and what they see about supply and price and availability and reliability and things like that. So just as while we're waiting for technical stuff to come to get fixed, I'd like to throw that out for discussion. That I'd like to recommend that this committee take that bill on for an informational hearing sometime this summer or fall, and that we move ahead with that discussion.
And Representative Beard, I'm not familiar with the legislation. It's regarding certificate of need. Is that correct? Or?
No, Madam Chair, specifically, it places a moratorium on the construction of new power plants in this state that use natural gas as their primary fuel source.
Madam Chair,
Representative Hilton.
Madam Chair, I have had a conversation with Representative Beard about this, and I think that it would be completely appropriate to have that bill and the subject in general as a subject of one of our future meetings. I totally agree that's something that does need to be discussed. It's going to be an ongoing issue.
Any further discussion about that issue? Okay, Representative Beard, we certainly will consider that.
Thank you.
Schedule something later in the session.
Just to attach a dollar figure to it, Madam Chair, I think it's going to be somewhere in the $4,000 or $5,000 range to bring at least one witness here, and I don't know if there'll be others that will want to ask to come and speak from different perspectives or not. But
okay,
just in the interest of full disclosure.
Thank you. Mr. Garvey, are you ready to be?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. We'll turn it back over to you then.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Commission Task Force. This is a presentation of the final report of the Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group. Just to refresh the committee's recollection, it helps to sort of make sure we're clear where we're at. This is a sort of a line chart of the respective emissions from the various states of the country. All the slopes are up. The slopes of the line are up. The state of Minnesota is in the middle of the pack. We're certainly not growing as fast as others, but we're certainly growing faster than others, and we have the task before us.
Madam Chair.
Yeah.
Could,
Senator Jackson.
How should we be following along in here, or is that,
Madam
where,
Chair,
what pages are we on?
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the task force, Senator Metzen, most of these slides are in the executive summary, but several are not. And so it'd be best if you just sort of listened and watched the overhead.
We'll listen and watch, okay.
Yes. This is a word chart of a chart that is in your packet. It's in the executive summary. It sort of basically describes and
Mr.
shows.
Garvey, it's going to be hard for us now.
Yeah.
Not having copies of the slides, though, unless you slow down changing the slides so that we can read them.
This chart is on page 3, Madam Chair. It's the pie chart comparing the state of Minnesota with the nation on our emissions. You see on this pie chart that the largest sector, the largest emission sector, is electricity, with transportation being The second one at 24%. Agricultural use is third at 14%. And residential and commercial fuel use. And other uses are sitting there at 10% each. In aggregate, that's 20%. You see that we're actually relatively close to the nation. There is differences. Our transportation emissions is less than the nation, 24 versus 27%. Our electricity is pretty comparable. We are an agricultural state, so we have more agricultural emissions. So it's just helpful to have that in the background. This is on page 2. As I characterize it as sort of the geologic description of our emissions, it shows you over time how the emissions have gone up and their relative rate of growth as well as their comparative size. It's just an idea to give the task force and members a snapshot of where we are and to some extent where we're going, because this chart sort of actually projects the emissions out by the various sectors out to 2025. With that as our baseline, Madam Chair, members of the task force, we have the Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group, or as I call it, the MCAG process. It has 55 stakeholders, members of the formal group, and then another 50 or so. You have in the very back of your report, if you flip it to the back of the report, you have the public comments, but then you have internally, should have the membership of the actual technical work groups and the members, so you could sort of see who's there.
Mr. Garvey, I just want to interrupt briefly to let you know that we do have a quorum present at this time. You can continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This advisory group was facilitated by the Center for Climate Strategies. They had their first meeting in April of last year, and their last meeting of in January 31st of this year. In between, they had about 8 full advisory group meetings, and we'll sort of say an additional sort of 64 thereabouts of the technical working group meetings in the interim. So hundreds and hundreds of hours were spent by the members. During the process, it was a very bottoms-up process. But at the end, they recommended 46 policy options. The final report that you have before you, as well as all the appendices, can be found on the website at www.minclimatechange.us. The process was iterative in nature. It started with an inventory of where our emissions are, and I just walked you through that. A forecast of what those emissions are, I just walked you briefly through that. It then identified a full range of possible actions. That full range started with 250 ideas and expanded out to about 325 ideas. Recognizing that that's too many ideas to go through a detailed analysis, they placed priorities on those various ideas, narrowed them down, started to develop straw proposals. From those straw proposals, they winnowed them down some more so that they could actually start developing a set of concrete ideas that would allow for assumptions and then analysis of the resulting greenhouse gas reductions from that idea, as well as the macro costs that would entail. In going through that process and then the analytical process, they evaluated the externalities and applied their common sense as to the feasibility of those ideas. As a result, some of those ideas were winnowed further and refined. They developed a series of alternatives to address the barriers that they identified as they identified good ideas. And then they aggregated the results. You have in the packet before you the aggregation of those results. You could see the actual analysis of each of these ideas in the appendices on the website. You can also see the progression over the 9 to 10 months that the advisory group worked on the website as each of the meetings and sectors are analyzed and the materials that were developed are still present. They went to the before the full group and had a vote to sort of see if the idea was supported by the full group. They had a series of kinds of votes, those that were unanimous, those that were done by consensus, those that had a supermajority, those that had a simple majority, and those that didn't have a majority. And you sort of see on the side of the chart, you see the evaluation and the measure. So when you look at your document and you see a chart that sort of has a unanimous level of support, you see unanimity. Was a large part of it, but not all of them were unanimous. There were some that had minor votes, a minor, very small subset, 4 would vote against it. There were some that basically were done simply by majority, but you sort of see that, so you have a sense of how the actual final group evaluated the projects. And then there's the finalized report and recommendation that we're discussing right now. The technical work groups broke down in many respects according to the sectors themselves. Heat energy supply dealt with electricity largely. Commercial, industrial, and residential technical work group dealt with energy efficiency and emissions from those sectors. The transportation and land use dealt with, as the topic mentions, transportation and land use. Agriculture, forestry, and waste likewise. Cross-cutting was where a lot of the educational components were dealt with. And then in the middle of the process, we developed a cap and trade technical work group to start analyzing the implications of a cap and trade process for the state. Madam Chair, members of the task force, on page 6 of the summary, you have this chart. In many respects, this is the single most important chart of the presentation and of the effort, in my opinion. It gives you 4 pieces of very useful information. The blue line shows you the projected emissions. It shows you where we're going without any actions. The red line shows the results of recent actions, the renewable energy standard, energy efficiencies, etc. You see the overlapping of the black and green line. That is coincidental, but it's also beneficial. The black line shows our target. It shows where we need to go pursuant to the Next Generation Energy Act, 15% below 2005 levels by 30% below 2005 levels by 2025. The green line shows that we can achieve those goals through the adoption and implementation of the ideas that the advisory group has developed. So on this chart, you see where we're going, the efforts we've made on the direction, in the effort that we need to be going, where we need to go, and the understanding that we can get there with sets of ideas. This chart is not in your packet in and of itself. It's actually a compilation, but it was worth sort of pointing out because this sort of chart shows the emission reductions from recent actions. And it also sort of highlights how important not only on a numerical basis the existing actions, but it shows how significant the renewable energy standard is that we've already adopted, as well as the demand efficiency. In many respects, Madam Chair, members of the task force, we will achieve half of the reductions that we need to get by 2015 and 2025 through the actions that we've already implemented, and that members of this task force and your respective committees working with the agencies and the governor have already implemented. And that is something that we should not underestimate how significant it is, that we're already working towards achieving that.
Mr. Garvey, what's the number that you use to quantify what would be half of the reductions?
Madam Chair, this is a variation. The next slide, and you see this slide. You see this slide with a different caption on the top of page 7 of your executive summary packet. The first slide is the reference case projections. This is a numerical where you saw in 1990 we had 119 million metric tons of carbon equivalent emissions going up to projected 200 million metric tons in 2025, but for the actions. You see the next line, it says reductions from recent actions. By 2015, you'll see that recent actions, current actions, will result in 20.8 million metric tons of carbon equivalent reductions. And in 2025, 37.8. So if you go back, Madam Chair, to the previous slide and you add up the emissions reductions resulting from the renewable energy standard at 7.72 and the demand efficiency at 6.2, resulting in a 13.71 or so reductions. Those are just over half of the 2015 reduction from recent actions. But they also sort of show that you're on your way from just those emissions. Did that answer your question, Madam Chair?
Yes, but I'm still trying to get my head around this. So we need to implement all of the recommendations in order to meet the 20.8 million metric carbon whatever emissions.
No, Madam Chair, the 20.8 are implementation of current actions.
Okay.
You see on line the fifth line down, total greenhouse gas reductions for the MCAG reductions results in another 22.2 million metric tons of carbon equivalent.
Slide.
On the top of page 7.
So it's 43 million
ma'am.
Need to meet by 2015?
Yes. In 2015, Minnesota needs to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 42 million metric tons and 90 million metric tons by 2025. And that's when you start looking at these numbers and adding them up.
Okay, Senator Anderson, did you have a question?
Well, Madam Chair, I'm trying to follow this as well. What I'm wondering is if the baseline that you're using includes new coal plants. So if the Big Stone plant were built or the Mesaba plant were built and did not sequester, how much would that reverse? Are they included or not included, in other words?
Mr. Garvey?
Mr. Chairman, members of the task force, Senator Anderson, the baseline in the reference case was established by the MCAG. It is my understanding that they incorporated in that reference case projected emissions from plants that were scheduled or potentially to come online in the timetable that they considered.
Any other questions? Okay, continue.
Actually,
Representative Beard has
Thank you, Madam Chair, for letting me have a second here, because there is a lot of stuff to digest in this tiny little graph. This is pretty significant stuff, Mr. Garvey, Madam Chair. Just by 2015, we need to come down 40 million metric tons over your baseline projection. That's 7 years from now. Now, Mr. Garvey, I've been here 6 short years, and I've seen what we've done to our electric rates and our reliability just in 6 years, and how far we haven't come in reducing greenhouse gases, but what we have done to supply and price. We have 7 more years to get to this number. How are we going to get there, and what is our economy going to look like? What's the grid going to look like if we get to this number in 7 short years?
Mr. Garvey.
Madam Chair, members of the task force, Representative Beard. The question that you're asking is the question that we need to, all of us need to ask ourselves, is how can we achieve this in a way that does not threaten the vibrancy of the state's economy? That's part of the dialogue that we as public policymakers need to have with all of us who are part of the sources of greenhouse gas emissions. What the advisory group struggled with and worked on and put together in this final report are a set of actions that, working with the things that we've already done, have the potential of getting us there. There are economic costs and there are economic benefits to the path that they've laid out. Part of, but they've left some things that need to still be done. In particular, some of the more granulated, more focused economic impacts of the ideas and other ideas that may come along. One of the things that the legislature did this past session was ask for an economic, environment, and health impacts study that will actually provide greater light on those kinds of questions. And once we have that information, we'll be able to be in a better position to make some determinations. In the meantime, Madam Chair, members, we're seeking to take steps that have value in reducing greenhouse gas emissions while at the same time not providing or adding to economic costs that we don't know the consequences of.
Madam Chair.
Representative Beard.
I'm going to have to leave before you get to the end of this probably, so let me cut to my ultimate question. Let's assume for the moment that we are going to hit these targets and we'll do so without massive economic disruption, maybe just massive lifestyle disruption. What will be the effect on the climate if we accomplish all this? We're going to go to a lot of work, a lot of effort. We're going to do some things. How will it actually impact what we're living in here?
Director Garvey.
Madam Chair, members of the task force, Representative Beard. Our view is that greenhouse gas emissions and climate change is a real problem. It's a problem that we contribute to, but we did not cause. It's also a problem that we cannot solve by ourselves, Minnesotan by itself. Therefore, the struggle that we have is how do we manage and address our contributions to that problem without taking steps that adversely affect our economy and the way to do things in a positive way. And that's the perpetual balance that we're trying to struggle with. That's why we view this as a start of a dialogue, not the end of the dialogue. We need to manage what we can do with what we should do with the consequences of those actions.
Representative Beard.
It sounds like that then you feel like there's a moral imperative that we act here, and so there is a moral component to this whole discussion that we need to engage in as policymakers. Perhaps that's beyond the scope of what MCAG was doing. But are those projections or anything like that, are those philosophical underpinnings, are they discussed in this report as I'm sitting reading it over the weekend here?
Director Garvey.
Madam Chair, members of the task force, Representative Beard. The task force and the effort that we're describing is compliance with the statute, where we were to present a set of plan, a set of activities and recommendations that would achieve the goals outlined in the legislation. The MCAG advisory group itself, its report, and this presentation did not discuss the science or the causes and whys of the proposal. It was to figure out a set of ideas that the state could adopt to achieve the statutory goals.
I would just like to remind members that we passed the Next Generation Energy Act of 2007 that established the goals.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did that legislatively, and the MK group was making recommendations for how we would meet those goals. Representative Beard, did you have a follow-up
I just had
question?
One follow-up question. Maybe it's more for this group than others, because we know that science is not a static state or a steady state. It's always uncovering and discovering new stuff. And I'm just ask the members of this group that as the science continues to discover things, refine conclusions, particularly as it comes to the modeling that apparently a lot of this is based on, modeling members, that as that's further refined and other conclusions may be drawn, I guess it's up to us then to recognize that we may need to change the goals and the objectives as things move forward. So being respectful of the work that the group did, they did it in response to what we did around this place. And so with that, I think I'll hold any other comments that I have or questions as it unfolds here.
I was thinking along the same lines as you, though, and as you'll note, the projections are for 2015 and 2025, and I don't know if later in the report maybe you get out to 2050, but I'm imagining it does anticipate there may be other technology and new science that directs us in future years.
Yeah.
Representative Westrup.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Garvey, the 157 million metric tons we estimate we have now and we're going to reduce, Representative Anderson brought up a good question, but let me take it from a different position. Is the overall reduction trying to achieve from the current status, and then we factor in new development, rated amount, so we can increase that number, or would the new development need to fit underneath the caps that we're talking about, essentially having to go further, because if you add new to the old number, something's got to give more to be able to live within that means.
Assistant Commissioner Thornton.
Madam Chair, members of the task force and Representative Westrum, the Climate Change Advisory Group and the work groups, the specific work groups, spent a lot of time trying to project out how different sectors within the state of Minnesota would be expected to grow in the future, to project out what we call the business as usual scenario for greenhouse gas emissions, which was the top line on the graph that Director Garvey showed a few minutes ago. So that tries to factor in the growth that is going to be occurring. The reductions that are required by the Next Generation Energy Act are from 2005 levels. So in order to achieve those reductions, you have to also offset the growth that is going to be occurring or projected to occur out into the future. And the set of recommendations that the MCAG made, including the existing actions that have already been implemented by the legislature took all of that into account and shows that it is possible to achieve those reduction goals with the growth that's expected to occur in the state.
Okay. Chair, just to that point.
Representative Westrum.
That's an important thing we need to keep in mind. This also includes new development. I think we need to be mindful of that. And I'm not sure we were all focused on those points in 2007. This stuff is ratified as being in bulk.
I appreciate your comments, but I do recall discussions about recognizing that the state would continue on and that there would be further development, and that needed to be taken into the formula, and a very, very important topic or issue that needs to be addressed.
Considered.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make sure I get this, too. Those are good questions that Representative Westrum asked. So let me make sure I understand, too, that according, Director Garvey, the other chart that you put up there that said the reductions from the actions we've already taken, is that in this publication? Do we have a copy of that?
It is in piece. What I did is I compiled. If you look, excuse me, Madam Chair.
Director Garvey.
If you look in the actual charts, at the bottom of each of the chart, it has lists of reductions from recent actions. And what I did was I compiled them.
In each different category?
In each, okay, on page, for example, on page 10. Mm-hmm. On page 10, you see.
My page 10 doesn't have a chart on. Oh, X10? Sorry, I'm in the wrong section. Thank you. I'm catching up here with the charts.
Of the executive summary, Madam Chair.
Gotcha.
You see the energy supply policy recommendations. At the bottom there in the gray area, you see reductions from recent actions, biomass for electricity, metro emission reduction project, and the renewable energy standard. What I did with this one chart that's up here is I compiled all those from the various options into one chart. So this chart is not in the executive summary, but I thought it'd be worthwhile for the committee to sort of see them compiled separately out. Now, my mistake was that I didn't make a copy of it to hand to you.
To follow up,
Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, thank you. That's really, helpful to have that all.
Yeah.
I'd like to get a copy of that.
Very much so.
I could just go highlight it otherwise. But it's helpful to look at that and put in perspective what we've already done. And I appreciate that you're pointing out that we're halfway there. Now, to get the other half of the way there, we'd have to get to that, you know, by 2015, which is only seven years away, 22 million more metric tons. In order to get to that additional reduction, we'd have to adopt all the recommendations from MCAG. I mean, that's one approach. That would be, you couldn't just take a few of them. We'd have to do all of them. They all add up to that reduction, correct? Or we could take other strategies. I mean, you talked about the coal plants and that they're incorporated in this. If we didn't build those, that would reduce that 22, and there'd be less work to do there. I don't know. That'd be maybe, you know, somewhere between 5 and 10 million more, less tons if we didn't have those coal plants. Is that true, the new ones?
Director Garvey.
Two parts to the question, if I understand it. Madam Chair, members of the task force, Senator Anderson. And I'll take the I don't know offhand exactly what the emission rates were calculated into regarding the proposed but not yet constructed generating facilities. Because as Mr. Thornton sort of reminded me, it's not a straight one plus, because these were modeled and it's a demand, and so there was actually some give and take. If you add a new generating facility, but it's beyond demand, you have consequences elsewhere in your portfolio of generating sources. So we'd have to go back into, I'll have to go back and look into the actual appendix on the energy supply to find the answer to that question.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess just a
Senator Anderson.
Kind of a simple answer in terms of what I'm looking for is to finish the job that we have, to meet the goals that are in law, we'd either have to adopt everything in this book, all the recommendations in this book is one strategy, but we'd have to adopt them all to get there. Or we could, you know, another approach, a combination could be to not build those two coal plants. We'd still have at least 10 million more tons to reduce. And then maybe there's a third approach, which nobody's thought of yet. I don't know what it would be. You know, I'm open to ideas. I know the MCAG recommendations are pretty broad-ranging and cover a whole range of sectors. But I guess the point I want to make is that to get the rest of the way, we have to look at a really comprehensive and pretty some heavy lifting yet to do. And I appreciate the progress we've made. But
yeah, I don't think that Director Garvey had gotten to responding to that yet.
Okay.
Yep. So maybe we can
apologize if you hadn't.
The beginning of this presentation started with the lines of emissions and where our emissions come from, and candidly, we need to all acknowledge that those emissions come from all of us in every in all of our day-to-day lives. So you need to make to reduce emissions will take a lot of various different tools. The important part of this conversation, though, is that this is the first time that we've looked at this in a comprehensive way and developed a sets of assumptions which have some controversies to them. The controversies on were those assumptions the correct one? Are they played out in the appropriate way? Will they come into being as we predict? But the value is that we actually started the calculations, looked at it holistically, put some numbers to some assumptions so that in future we can actually determine and go back and live it. This is, as I sort of characterize it, from the start of the dialogue, not the end of the dialogue. And so, Madam Chair, to answer Senator Anderson's question, yes, what you have is a set of aggressive goals that have been adopted by the state. You have a set of ideas that, based upon the assumptions that went into the calculus of those ideas, it shows that it's achievable, but it also sort of identifies how significant of a implementing those set of ideas is going to be, and it still gives us some magnitude of the extent of the problem. I would say to answer the question that there are countless ideas and countless options. There are other ideas that are on, that we can think about to address that the MCAG may not have thought about or analyzed properly, but that's part of the continuing dialogue.
Well, Mr. Garvey, is your presentation over, your formal presentation? Was there more that you were going to offer? Or is this a good time for us to get into this discussion? Because my question goes along with Senator Anderson, too. Do we have to, if we accepted every recommendation of the task force, would it get us to our goal? Or is it a set of alternatives from which we can take some recommendations that will add up to meeting our goal?
Madam Chair, members of the task force, my answer to that question is what the MCAG advisory group has said is based upon their sets of ideas, the assumptions that went into their ideas, the analysis of those ideas. It shows us that we can achieve the goals. But it's a living. I think it behooves us to always understand that there are sets of assumptions that we need to sort of put our own professional judgment and common sense to. We need to understand that this is not necessarily the only set of ideas that are potentially out there, and we need to sort of understand that this is a living and breathing approach to planning.
If there are other recommendations, yes, why were they not addressed by the MK group?
There are themes of ideas that were explored. Madam Chair, by the advisory group, by a set of very smart, very dedicated people. But they're making sets of assumptions on technological adoption. They're making some assumptions on the science and the calculations. There's some discussion, for example, on carbon capture, the carbon sequestration potential of lands, and those kinds of debates where there's legitimate questions on how you actually calculate them, and additional science is being done. So that's why you sort of say, for this purpose, you sort of say, these people did extraordinary amounts of work based upon the information and ideas that they came up with. And it's extraordinarily valuable to do that.
I wasn't impugning,
no,
you know, the skill and the knowledge of the committee. I was just wondering if there actually is if there are a lot of other concepts or ideas out there that could be pursued, or if everything that is really basically known was addressed by the committee. Or if they're waiting for other types of technology to come forward.
Madam Chair?
Mr. Thorne?
There are other things that the committee could have looked at and didn't, and because they don't know everything. And because, quite frankly, we're experimenting. The states are experimenting. We're not getting quite the help that we need from the federal government, and states like Minnesota, there's 20 some odd states now that are either have been through a process like this or that are in the process of going through one. And each time this happens, the next state comes up with something new, and we need to look at what these other states are doing and learn from them as well. We learned from, quite frankly, we borrowed a lot from Arizona and New Mexico and California and a couple of other states, but there's many states that have gone on after us, and we need to learn from them. And to continue this theme about the ability to implement these immediately, the way I view the recommendations from the MCAG is that they gave us a picture of how the next generation Energy Act goals could be met. They didn't tell us specifically how to do it. Some of the recommendations are more ready for implementation than others. Many need much more thought and conversation, and some, as Director Garvey just mentioned, like the issue of planting trees and changing cropland use, need more scientific research before we know exactly how to do it and how to do it right. And so it's going to be very, these are the goals that the legislature set are very ambitious, and it's going to be hard, and it's going to take a lot of continued work on all of our parts and to put together and add on the implementation items that are needed in order to keep us moving forward.
I see that there are other questions that to be asked, and my head is spinning with how soon do we have to get going in order to meet our goal, and do we have the value of being able to wait on some of this? But do you have more of your presentation? You do. Okay.
Yeah.
And Senator Tomasoni and Senator Dill are your do you want to ask your questions now, or?
I don't know if I have a question more than I have a comment.
Next.
Senator Tomasoni.
Because I think the task force did a pretty good job. I think probably the issue is that technology is changing so fast that it's very difficult to actually say what the final outcome might be, or what whether or not it will change again in 5 years. We may start down a road and find out that while we're cleaning up the air, we're losing all kinds of jobs to China or India because our energy costs are going so high that businesses are moving. And we may have to refocus, or we may find that what we're doing is really, really good, and energy costs are going down, and businesses are staying, and people are able to stay in their homes. But I think the one thing that we can't do is to try and say that we should exclude technologies that are new technologies, such as the Mesabi Energy, which may ultimately, we may ultimately find are really positive things, because if we can clean up coal, it's our most abundant resource and it's our cheapest resource. If we suddenly say no, coal can't be used anymore, we may have this rush to gas, which could have a very negative effect on the cost of energy all over, not just for electricity, but for heating our homes and heating our businesses. And so I think considering all the options is good. And some of these projects have had some significant investment in them already, and it should be at least worth our time and effort to allow them to continue to go forward to see where we're going to go next, because eliminating new technologies is not a good idea, I don't think. I think what we need to do is make sure that we're exploring all the options.
Okay. Senator Dill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the things I thought about right from the get-go was the influence of local planning and zoning and trying to get people to live closer to where they work and play and go to school and church and so forth, to try to cut down on transportation cost. And I see you do have land use planning and zoning development strategies listed here. Now, nationwide, we're losing about 2 acres of farmland per minute. We've got problems with fragmentation of forest land and fragmentation of agricultural land in this state. We've got people commuting 100 miles to get to work and so on, and it just seems to me a lot could be done in the planning and zoning area to try to encourage people to live within city where there's city water and sewer and they're closer to their work and so forth. I just wondering how much emphasis did you put on improved planning and zoning at the local level?
Director Garvey.
Madam Chairman, members of the task force, Senator Dill, the TLU, the Transportation Land Use Technical Work Group, had that component as one of their main topics. They divided their thinking into three categories. One is to reduce the carbon emissions from the fuel. The other is to reduce vehicle miles traveled. Another is to basically make vehicles more efficient. And certainly part of that is in the land use planning and development strategies was TLU number one. If you look on page number 11 of the executive summary, you see the TLU 1 was improved land use planning and development strategies, and they started working through that. It's not certainly the only strategy that they thought of, but it was one of theirs that they talked about. If you want to learn more about that, look on the TLU Trent chapter in the book, as well as the appendices, sir.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Senator Dill, TLU 1, the land use planning, taking advantage of putting jobs and homes close to transportation, existing transportation corridors and transit, is about the 12th most effective strategy that they recommended under the assumptions that they made on that. But it's also one that I suspect will be a challenge to implement because of all the different communities, local units of government, and whatnot that would need to be involved in the conversation there.
Okay, I'm going to ask Representative Peterson has a question, and then we'll go on with the presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to those who have the report, I'm looking at Appendix L, starting on page 16, ES1 comments on energy supply, and then referring to page 29 in comments submitted by Barbara Fries, Union of Concerned Scientists, and the other advocacy groups. On the top of page 29, related to renewable electricity standard costs, and into three meetings, December 5, January 10, and January 24, the cost of the renewable electricity standard varied ranged from $2 billion in the first meeting to a negative $1.7 billion in the second meeting to $7.5 billion in the third meeting. Similarly, the costs of CO2 fluctuated in three meetings from $20 a ton to negative $13 a ton to the final, in the report on the screen, $56 per ton. I mean, if it's $56 per ton and you're buying or selling RECs, renewable electricity certificates, somebody stands to make a lot of money on that number. That's just a comment. But I'm just wondering, how do those fluctuations get explained and arriving on the $7.5 billion cost for the renewable electricity standard and the $56 a ton for CO2? Because if you read down a little bit farther, referring to Xcel Energy's integrated resource planning, you might assume, since they're half the state's market, that the $7.5 billion cost of the renewable electricity standard should appear in Xcel's integrated resource planning. But it doesn't seem to. In fact, Xcel's plan says they might save $500 million with the renewable electricity standard. So I'm wondering, you know, versus the model versus the actual utility with the ratepayers and the shareholders that has to deal with these types of things. It seems to fluctuate quite wildly. That'd be my first question, and I have a follow-up.
Mr. Thornton.
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, the MCAG group are a bunch of humans, and we're imperfect. And at the end of the process, these concerns were flagged, but there wasn't enough time to resolve them. And what we believe is that there are some issues associated with some of the assumptions about the cost of wind power that need to be further examined, and that's what we stated in the executive summary of the report and in the sections on energy supply. I still don't understand why they changed. It wasn't intentional on anybody's part. I think it might just be a mistake. But clearly we think that the numbers might be wrong, and as we stated in the final report, as we look into this further and start diving into this further, that's one of the things that clearly needs to be reexamined and considered.
Thank you. And then further down, it seems like you've touched on the part about the cost estimate for wind. You know, in the report, you know, from November 07 to January 08, it ranged from 5 cents per kilowatt hour to 15 cents per kilowatt hour. And then you go down a little bit farther, and in an actual utilities plan, Xcel's, they're projecting it to be 5.8 cents through 2015, 2010 to 2015, and then to 7.8 cents after 2015, assuming no production tax credit at the federal level. I mean, so I'm wondering, you know, Xcel was on this 55-member board, and these ratepayers and shareholders are going to have some sort of number that you guys settle on, or their integrated resource planning just doesn't seem like it's. I mean, whose plan is better? I mean, whose numbers are better? I guess what I'm saying: well, the utilities plan or the group's plan. That's enough. Thanks,
Director Garvey.
Madam Chair, two quick points. First, most specifically. And it sort of shows why we need to always keep in mind that this is a living process that we're part of, is the modeling numbers that the consultants and the modelers were using in the process of developing these numbers were from Xcel's 2005 resource plan that they filed with the Public Utilities Commission.
Not the latest one.
Not the
okay,
latest
well
one.
Okay, well, then that's different. Thank you for clarifying.
That's sort of one of lots of things, lots of moving pieces. And that's sort of the second part, is that the value of this process and the value of this document is that we did try to come through these analysis
but we always need to sort of understand that the analysis was based on sets of assumptions and ideas that themselves should always be revisited to make sure that they're still sound tomorrow.
Okay, why don't you go ahead with your presentation now?
The next slide, Madam Chair, that I'd like to sort of bring to your attention is on the bottom of page 7. It's the MCAG recommendations cumulative results by technical work group. This is the chart that's on the bottom of page 7 of the executive summary, except I've highlighted, if you will, the AFW numbers. Because candidly, members of the task force, this was the big aha that I learned from this, is that while first was the value of existing actions, but the second was that the next set of opportunities for greenhouse gas emissions were in the agricultural, forestry, and waste sector, where when you look at the next set of numbers, you see most of them coming in agricultural, forestry, and waste, not in transportation or land use or additional energy supply questions. And so to the extent that this document helps us focusing our attention and directing our activities, this was one of those kinds of areas that we sort of said, all right, agricultural, forestry, and waste ideas are where we can proceed next. Madam Chair, members of the committee, this slide is at the back of is on page 16 of the executive summary. And it shows that we tried to take the sets of ideas that the MCAG and the consultants tried to take the set of the options and then rank them by sort of cost. How much would this idea cost based upon their assumptions? And you see the sets. Those on the left have net savings. Those on the right have net costs. And you see they walk across the idea, across the spectrum. Some are expensive, some aren't so expensive. But that's not where the analysis starts. That's not where the analysis ends. The next set of analysis is on page 15, and it actually gives you and shows you the bar chart on actual sets of greenhouse gas savings from the various ideas. And you need to put these two ideas together because you want to get the most amount of greenhouse gas savings for the lowest cost. And so these two charts together sort of lead us to believe that you move towards the forestry management, biofuels, and waste management. Madam Chair, this slide is not in the executive summary. This is the 2050 outlook. It's a busy chart, but it also the MCAG made a conclusion that as far as their formal quantitative analysis could go, it could only go out to 2025. Beyond that, there were too many variables and too many uncertainties. Understanding, though, that we had an obligation to do that, the consultants and the MCAG did sort of try to extrapolate out to 2025. So the value of this chart is that it sort of shows you see the black line, you see the black line down, that's from 2025 to 2050, 30% below reductions of 2005 to 80%, is that you sort of see that all of our actions at some point, if you don't continually improve, will start shifting up just because of economic growth and population growth and those kind of things. So what this chart shows, while it's not necessarily robust in any kind of calculated sense, it does offer the perspective that we need to continually improve even as we hit our 2025 goals, that you need to continually improve and reduce the greenhouse gas emission content to achieve the the 80% reductions by 2050. Madam Chair, the remaining slides are just a quick highlight of how of some of the ones that Mr. Thornton and I put together just to sort of describe some of the things that we've already accomplished and been working on with the last several months in this past legislative session, for example. But, you know, Senate Council has already provided you a more detailed example set of this analysis. So I don't need to walk through this at all, except to basically sort of say that the last one is the Cap and Trade and the Green Solutions Act. It is implicit in the advisory group concluded that a state-only cap and trade would not be in our best interest, but they also sort of concluded that a regional approach has some value and that urged us to consider that. And we are in the process of doing that, and as members of this committee know, there are provisions within the Green Solutions Act of 2008 that provides an opportunity for legislators to provide input into the Midwest Governors Association Act. We have the MGA, the Greenhouse Gas Accord stakeholder group, is meeting on the 23rd and 24th here in Minneapolis. It's open to the public for viewing, and I'm sure there will be members that maybe want to be there. Certainly members of the audience will want to be there. But that is a process that's underway, and we hope to use that process not only to give us another tool, but just as importantly, allow us to develop the economic analysis as well as the health and environmental impacts analysis to better answer some of the more specific questions of how addressing greenhouse gas emissions will affect Minnesotans on a personal and economic levels. Before we go to the final wrap-up slide,
Assistant Commissioner Thornton.
I would like to just add a couple of things on this slide alone, because they weren't the subject of bills that were passed this last session. The Department of DNR, Agriculture, and the Pollution Control Agency are actively looking into the issues raised in the AFW 1, 2, and 5 recommendations, which are associated with management of land and terrestrial sequestration. We recognize the huge opportunity there in Minnesota. DNR manages directly something like 5.5 million acres of land, and their management influences the management of countless other acres. And so we understand the responsibility to try to see what can be done in those areas, but the answers and the science there are still need work, and we've begun to work on that. And with respect to AFW 7 and 8, which are the waste management issues, another one that was, as Director Garvey said, has a high opportunity for us, the PCA is extremely excited to begin looking at how we can make some dramatic increases in recycling rates in Minnesota and reducing waste in a number of things, as we outlined in our solid waste policy report. So there are some things going on that we're beginning to try to look into those, and hopefully we can come back in the future with some better recommendations and more information.
Let me ask you a question about table EX1. On page EX7, where you have projected greenhouse gas emissions after recent actions, how far does that take us? Does that just take us through the renewable energy standard, or does it take into account legislation passed in 2008?
Madam Chair, members of the task force, that line is, we'll call it the It's the result of subtracting the line above it.
If I meant the line above it, actually, reductions from recent actions. Does that take into account legislation that was passed in 2008 or just through 2007?
Madam Chair, it only deals with the actions before the calendar year 2008.
Okay. questions or comments from task force members? Representative Beard.
Commissioner Garvey, you showed a slide that we don't have in here that took us out to, I believe, 2050. An 80% reduction is apparently a goal or an objective from somewhere. When was the last time we were at emissions that were that low in this state? And I'm thinking not just total emissions, I'm thinking in terms of per capita. Do you have any idea what the population is going to be in 2050? And when was the last time we were that low per capita?
Madam Chair, member of the task force, Representative Beard, the goals that I've referred to in the course of this presentation and that the MCAG worked towards were goals that were set in statute. And as to your question, I do not know. I'm sure we could actually, with some rough estimation between my staff and David's staff, we could probably give a number, but it'd be probably a while ago, sir.
My point, Madam Chair, is that that's 42 years from now, and I want us to think back to the year 1966, which was 42 years prior to today, and imagine people sitting in this room debating what's going on right now in our society. Westrum wouldn't be sitting here with a Wi-Fi connection trying to keep up with what's going on. We wouldn't have had the flash drive problem that you had 20 minutes ago or an hour ago, I guess, now. You get the point. Things change. So I know you were given a set of targets to start with, a broad set of assumptions from climate change strategies. Among the things they gave you to ruminate on and select from as you came up with this report, was there any discussion in there about about a change in the way we create energy, physically speaking? You know, right now, heat has to happen for work to be produced somehow. I'm trying to think 42 years from now, if we're going to get down to this number, is there something coming over the horizon that will propel machinery or heat homes or cool refrigerators that doesn't involve an exchange of heat somehow? Because right now, the best way for us to get heat is because something burns. Carbon is released somewhere. Carbon's involved in the process because we are, after all, carbon-based life forms, I believe. I think I heard that on Star Trek somewhere, Mr. Garvey. But I wondered, in that set of assumptions or in your ruminating on this, did any of that come up for discussion?
Representative Director Garvey.
Madam Chair, members of the task force, Representative Beard, I'll make a stab at that. I think David will probably want to weigh in on it. One of the reasons the advisory group spent nearly all of its time focusing on the 2025 timetable was that was close enough that you could sort of do some kind of appreciable analysis of what technological changes and patterns would be. Once you went beyond 2025, it became crystal ball analysis. There's hopes and projections, but no one felt any confidence that they could basically say for sure. There is, we'll say, talk that they would hope that there'd be major changes in technological, technological changes and advances that sort of helped you move it, but you didn't. So we focused on, and the group focused on, the 2025 as our more concrete near-term proposal.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Assistant Commissioner Thornton.
Representative Beard, on page EX10, ES13 specifically addresses that point. Technology-based approaches, including research and development on fuel cells, energy storage, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And the group did not quantify that because they didn't know how to. And what we have been telling folks is that in order to achieve the 2050 reduction goals, we are going to have some major changes and advances in technology of how we generate and use energy and how we get from point A to point B.
Senator Pearsall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Thornton or Mr. Garvey, now that you've referenced us back to page EX10, I see that on there, nuclear power support and incentives are recommended for further study. is how much discussion did nuclear power get in the entire compilation of this report we're looking at, not just this page? What is the discussion about nuclear and its future?
Assistant Commissioner Thornton.
I have a great interest in it.
Madam Chair, Senator Pearso, it actually got quite a bit of discussion. The group wrestled with when a nuclear power plant might be possible in the state, given the social and political concerns, as well as the issues about waste. And within the within the current time frame to 2025, they elected not to consider nuclear power, thinking that it would take a long time. If everything that people were concerned about with nuclear power were to be addressed, it would take a long time. So the group acknowledged that it might have a role in the future, but it won't be in the near future, I guess would be the quickest way to say it. And they emphasized that they wanted to make sure the issues about safety and waste were addressed before they would want to see that move forward.
Thank you.
Senator Dale.
Madam Chair, members, the nuclear power industry is extremely safe. And as you think back in the history of this country, I don't think there's been a single fatality associated with any kind of malfunction on a nuclear power plant. And if we're looking out to the year 2025, isn't that 17 years from now? It seems like with a changing interest in reducing our carbon footprint, it just seems to me that in a 17-year period, it would be a possibility to at least imagine or at least work toward another nuclear power plant in this state.
Madam Chair, members of the task force, Senator Dill.
Director Garvey.
This is one of the topics where the members of the advisory group called it the way they called it. Others can sort of disagree. We've sort of been in a position that we think that the moratorium should be removed and it should be considered, because when its time is, when and if it's appropriate, it should be able to be considered. But the advisory group considered it the way they considered it.
Any further questions or comments? Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. I'd like to draw your attention to two letters on the desk. One is from a group of people, and it is unfinished business recommendations for 2009 legislative action. Another is a letter from Excelsior Energy, and I was wondering if either of those groups or individuals would like to make any comments regarding their written material. Mr. Grant.
Madam Chair and members of the task force, Bill Grant for the Isaac Walton League. I, along with the people who signed this letter to you, were members of the Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group. We took the initiative to identify some of the proposals that had come from the work of the Climate Change Advisory Group for you to begin thinking about as you look forward to the next legislative session. I'd like to make it clear that by identifying 9 or 10 proposals, we don't mean that we don't think action should be taken on the other 40 or so recommendations. It just occurred to us that these were things that, for the most part, achieved fairly significant greenhouse gas emission reductions at a reasonably low cost. Some of these things are things that have already been, have begun to be addressed by the legislature. Others are things that, as of yet, have not received much attention here, but that we would hope over the course of the interim and beginning next session would achieve greater attention. you can read these at your own leisure, and if you want me to, I'm happy to kind of walk through the recommendations that we've selected out. I don't know how much time you...
Really briefly, Mr.
Very,
Grant.
Very briefly, Madam Chair. The first recommendation deals with the energy use coming from the industrial sector. There were a couple of recommendations there that involve providing greater incentive for combined heat and power or cogeneration projects, as well as other energy efficiency related activities in the industrial sector. The second is an issue you've had some discussion about this morning around a generation performance standard for new power plants. It's our feeling that the group, first of all, it's clear that the group did endorse a generation performance standard for projects not currently in the regulatory pipeline. It's our view as a group of people who signed this letter that the generation performance standard should apply to those projects as well. But even if we can't achieve that, we think there's value in putting a generation performance standard into effect for future power plants so that we at least meet emission rates comparable to new natural gas plants or to coal plants that fully capture and store their carbon. Third recommendation deals with the actually the next three recommendations deal with the transportation sector, and my own view is that this is a sector that we've spent much too little time on as a source of carbon emissions, and as I think Director Garvey pointed out from the work that the MCAG did, it is the second largest sector. We highlighted three things. The climate-friendly transportation pricing is a way for license tabs, insurance companies to provide incentives to drivers to reduce their number of miles driven and to encourage more efficient vehicle purchases. The fourth recommendation deals with a low carbon fuel standard. If we can think of the transportation sector as really a three-legged stool in terms of reducing emissions, the first leg being improving the efficiency of the vehicle itself, the second leg being reducing the number of miles driven, the third leg would be to reduce the carbon intensity of the fuel itself. And the low-carbon fuel standard, which was the subject of a very informative informational hearing earlier this year, is an approach that's being undertaken in several states that we could consider here. The Clean Cars Bill obviously received a great deal of attention this year, came close to adoption. It's our view that's the big heavy hitter on the opportunities that Minnesota would have to reduce carbon emissions from the transportation sector. So we recommend it again to you for your consideration. Sixth recommendation deals with something that I found very interesting, and that's the amount of carbon that's currently stored in peatlands in Minnesota. Minnesota, along with, I think, Michigan, in terms of states in the lower 48, have the largest percentage of peatlands by acreage of any states. And again, tremendous amount of carbon being stored there. There are certainly activities that are going forward now for use of peat in horticultural applications and so forth that we think are detrimental to the protection of peatlands, but there are other activities that we ought to be considering there as well. Your committee spoke some this morning about tree planting and the big bang for the buck that appears to be there, particularly for urban tree planting. And I'm not just talking about the Twin Cities. I'm talking about every community in the state. We already have a program in Minnesota, the Minnesota Relief Program, that I think the legislature might want to take a look at again as a way to really ramp up the efforts to improve urban forestry. The eighth recommendation deals with the way in which we evaluate proposals for new large projects that have large carbon emissions associated with them to make sure that the environmental review process is incorporating a real look at the greenhouse gas impacts of those projects. And the final recommendation, which should be kind of an obvious one, is the fact that the Midwest Governors Association is working now toward the development of a model rule for regional cap and trade and Minnesota's participation in that. It's my expectation that we will have a model rule for the legislature to consider for adoption next year. And of course, it would be premature of me to say I love it, but I think if things continue in the direction that they are now, it's something that we believe we'll be able to recommend to you for passage next year.
So. You know, Mr. Grant, something that I don't see much attention to and which represents 10% of carbon emissions is consumers and in retail. And I'm wondering if there was much attention that was directed to that during the MCAG process and if there are many recommendations for consumers to have take some personal responsibility in reducing carbon emissions.
Madam Chair, I don't have the full list of MCAG recommendations in front of me right now, but I know that there were recommendations within the residential, commercial, and industrial group that dealt with residential energy use and ways to achieve savings in that sector as well. We didn't put it on this list because, as it turns out, unless you get a very large number of residential consumers taking action, you don't get a big bang for the buck on carbon emission reductions. That's not to say that we don't strongly support those kinds of activities.
Well, that could probably be one of the more cost-effective means of reducing carbon emissions, too.
It could very well.
Madam Chair.
Yeah, Representative Hilty.
Mr. Grant, and I was going to ask Mr. Garvey to comment on this as well. Now, one of the recommendations that did emerge from the Transportation and Land Use group that generated a lot of controversy was the question of lowering speed limits. I say that you haven't addressed that in any of your recommendations, but it seems to me that that would be a really significant emissions reduction as well as a just plain saving a lot of people a lot of money with virtually no cost involved in implementing it. I'm sure you've given us some thought, but my understanding is that, well, and from my own experience, I know perfectly well that it would be possible to reduce gasoline consumption, at least in high-speed corridors, by anywhere from 10 to 20%. You want to comment on that?
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman and Representative Hilty, there's no question about the greenhouse gas emission savings that come from lowering speed limits, and it was a recommendation that received a simple majority endorsement by the group, at least if my recollection is correct. There's no particular reason not to have put it on this list other than the fact that we already had three transportation recommendations that groups wanted to forward to you for your consideration. I think that there's strong support within our group, at least for considering a reduction in speed limits as a way to achieve significant greenhouse gas reductions. And, of course, back in the late 70s, early 80s, this was a move that we took to reduce the problem associated with scarcity of supply, and it certainly can have that impact as well.
Okay, I would like to turn it over to Senator Anderson, but before I do that, I would like to point out another table here that was put together by Senate Majority Research person who's assigned to this committee, Sandra Boone. And it identifies the MCAG recommendations and what is being done and legislation that has occurred around that. And it can be a helpful tool also.
Senator Anderson.
Oh, Madam Chair, I just wanted to make a comment that followed up on what you were talking about related to saving energy in homes, because I think that is an area that we need to look at more closely and see how we can work with the utilities in particular to get those reductions. I saw a really interesting study that was done by this international group. Actually, Representative Knuth found this and sent it to me last session, that was done by this international economic consulting group, the McKinsey Group, that identified internationally what it would take to get to the carbon reduction goals that are the same as the state's, the 80% by 2050 reduction goals. And they said that you could get halfway there with at a net profit of 17% through energy efficiency improvements. So you could make a lot of money investing in reducing energy. And they identified the most inefficient energy-wasting sectors in the world. And the number one most inefficient sector in the world was heavy industry in China. And the second most inefficient sector was United States residences in the world. So they identified that overall as one of the places that would have the most potential for reducing waste of energy. And so I think there's a lot we can do there, and it's also something that allows everybody in Minnesota to get into the act of trying to, you know, help be solutions to the problem. So I think it's something we should really look at.
I know I've become certainly much more conscious, and when I leave my home,
yes,
I go around turning off everything that's unnecessary or unplugging it or, you know.
And putting power strips
certainly,
on.
Exactly, turn off the power strips, and something I wasn't conscious of in the past. So, Representative Western.
I guess maybe just a comment to Mr. Grant, but also
a little bit at your urging in pursuit of more emphasis on the lowering speed limits. As I recall, the recommendation,
Mr. Grant, free to correct me if I'm
wrong. I think it was down to 45 miles an hour. While there might not be a cost, at least an alleged cost, the state has to appropriate money to do it, or some group has to appropriate money. There's a huge cost to the transportation sector. In a rural area where you drive a long ways to get to most places, time is money. In a rural area where a lot of people's livelihoods is over the road,
5 miles.
Time is money. The big rigs, while they aren't as fuel efficient as I think they could be, they certainly are more fuel efficient than they were 20 and 30 years ago, what we had on the farm. And rigs don't drive out at 60 miles an hour anymore. And so 75 is certainly an easy goal or an easy speed for the rigs to run well within the
hazards associated with
the
drivers to
only double mileage per spot. 3 miles, 3.5, 4 miles per gallon wasn't uncommon. Oftentimes, at least 5 to 6 to 7. In some rigs, up to 8 miles per gallon. I still think it could be better, but we've done better even at higher speeds. So I just want to affirm to the citizens that I don't think we should go down the road and regulating their lives down to 45 miles an hour, and there is a significant cost. And dare I say, maybe that's the reason the group has maybe not put that forward as one of the strong recommendations as a hookup. It might be early this year.
Representative Hilty would like to comment, and then Mr. Grant.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Westrom, I don't think anybody has ever, to my knowledge, suggested 45 miles an hour as an optimum speed. I think that most modern vehicles actually maximize their fuel efficiency at about 60 miles per hour. And I would like to point out additionally that, ironically, there is one group nationwide that is lobbying for lowering the speed limits. You know what it is? It is the Truckers Association.
Representative Boston. Blanketing all them together. together, because I happen to know a lot of truckers, and I don't know one of them that would be advocating for that. So I think they might have a narrow following, although they might have a name that sounds broad. I'm not part of it, that's for sure.
Mr. Grant.
And Madam Chair and Representative Westrum, even though it scares the heck out of me when a trucker passes me going 75 miles an hour, I think that the recommendation of the group was at 55, back to 55, which is where it was in the late 70s, early 80s.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hornstein.
Well, thank you. Madam Chair, Representative Hilty made my point. I was also aware, I think it was last week, a press conference took place with the Trucking Association. I did contact their representative here in Minnesota. It was a national, actually, meeting in Washington, D.C., where they called on the feds to lower the speed limit. So I think there is support for this, and I hope we'll take this seriously as an important recommendation.
Okay. Senator Anderson.
Oh, Madam Chair, I just wanted to point out my intern had pulled out a statistic that you might find interesting. He said that when the Model Ts were first developed, they had an average fuel efficiency of about 17 miles per gallon, which is higher than, I believe, our national fleet efficiency standards 100 years later. And it just kind of is a stark reminder that we have so much, there's so much more we can do, and our technology will allow us to do that we should be doing.
Representative Osmond.
Well, thank you, Madam Speaker. I don't want to miss an opportunity to jump in on a controversial issue. But I would like people to think about the efficiencies, and it does seem to me that to lower the speed limits, you're going to focus on making many a lawbreaker that are currently not breaking the law. But if I can go that speed at a higher efficiency, it seems to me that maybe that would be an incentive for me to strive for that efficiency. And so if I want to go faster, if I have to do it in a more efficient vehicle, or if I have a gas consumption consuming vehicle, a real guzzler, then I have to slow up. That would also be an incentive. So be creative as you look at these things in the future, because you try slowing me up, you're going to make me a lawbreaker. So.
Okay, I'll give the last word to Representative Westrum, and then we need to move on.
Well, Chair, Representative Osmond actually probably has full efficiencies can be achieved. You don't have to go to 45 or 45,000 dollars. That's really just an arbitrary number. It's it put the onus back on the ingenuity of the country.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I have to just share with the people in the room, since we're talking about vehicular improvements. A constituent of mine asked if we could, get busy and pass a bill that would allow him to put a motor on his bicycle, and then he would have the law enforcement would inspect it regularly, but he would pay DMV for titling it.
Motorcycle. Called moped.
Right. And I thought, well, let's see. We don't come back till January. Well, let's see. And he had already called DMV state office and the local office where he would pick up his title. And they said, we do not title bicycles in this state, and we aren't going to. So there's an idea for somebody who wants to grab it. I don't think I want to latch on.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Graham.
You.
I don't want to prolong this, but is there anybody that feels that they have to add something to the conversation here? Okay. There's one other item that I'd like to bring up at this time, and that is that we do have the ability to impose assessments for the to support the task force's work. And I think that there are two areas in which we're really in need of some expert advice. One of them is that we need somebody who's really committed to seeing that we move forward on the recommendations of the task force, and coming to us with ideas that that are the most efficient, the most cost-effective, and help us to move forward, and also are able to tell us what progress we're making. And so I think it would be helpful for us to have a consultant who is committed to working with the task force in in moving an aggressive agenda forward. But I also think that another consultant we need is an electrical engineer that would be able to help us with transmission problems, with identifying sweet spots. I know that the PUC also does not have the availability of that type of expertise. And so I think it's a position that would be helpful for us to have as we try to iron out all the problems we have with transmission and moving the renewable energy standard forward. And so at this time, I've had some discussions with Representative Hilty, and we've thought it would be a good idea to, again, impose the assessment against the utilities to be able to support those types of activities. We will bring that back and to you for future discussion, but is there anybody that would like to comment at this time or have any questions about that? Representative Westrum.
Chair, is your intent not to move that motion today, but it's just a heads up for
you? We do need to move the motion for the assessment today. It needs to be made before the end of the fiscal year.
Then I've got several questions, Madam Chair.
Okay.
What do you expect the cost? Is this a permanent position or just a 6-month,
12-month window that
these positions would be?
My
the second question with this,
who are you anticipating
would be that person or persons?
Or how would we go about selecting?
It's very vague at this time because we don't know anybody that meets those qualifications. We're not looking for somebody as permanent staff, at least at this time. We're looking for somebody who would act as a consultant and be under retainer. And we aren't clear at this time about how much of their time would be required. So first of all, we need an RFP to submit for, I think it would be two people, actually. One would be a consultant regarding moving forward with the recommendations of the MCAG. The other one would be an electrical or technical engineer. And in our discussions with Berlhar from the PUC and others, other states, apparently what other states are doing is retaining retired engineers to act in such a capacity. So we would be submitting a RFP for that also.
So Madam Chair,
do we have an idea of what, let's just focus on the electrical engineer for now, what they would cost, at least for the hour, and we're estimating this might be $1,000 over the 12-month period. When the RFP comes back, we actually examine that as a task force and
What we do know is that the cost of an engineer is higher than what the state guidelines allow, and so that's why it would be perhaps a retired person, and it would be a consultant.
So the second part of the question:
Is it a done deal after we vote on it today, or do we have staff put an RFP together?
Okay. What I think we need to do is move forward as quickly as possible. So I'm assuming that if the concept is adopted, that we would move forward. We haven't brought RFPs before the task force in the past. Usually the chairs have reviewed that with staff and decided at that point. It's the legislative. Who is the head of the legislative coordinator? Greg Hubinger is the one that usually handles that. Representative Hilty would like to make some comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Westrum and members, one of the things looking forward, as I'm sure you're aware, The Legislative Electric Energy Task Force is due to expire on January 1st. It was our intention clearly that the tasks that it has had in the past would go forward with the newly created Energy Commission, which was created because of the need for a broader focus on energy issues than just the generation of electricity. I think that we anticipate that that commission, with its broader scope, is going to have a lot of business to conduct. That would certainly be my intention, that we use this as the vehicle for addressing the many, many facets of energy that we have to address in this state. Transportation, certainly, heating and cooling, all of the efficiency issues that virtually every area that has been identified by the Climate Change Advisory Group is in one way or another an energy issue. So I think we're anticipating a lot of work. And as Senator Solon has pointed out, most of this would involve accessing expert testimony, consultants, and getting people here that can help us sort out some of these problems. I think before you joined the meeting this this morning, Representative Westrum, Representative Beard mentioned, and I think there was general agreement that we should, among other things, take up the use of natural gas for the generation of electricity. And he pointed out that a national expert that he has in mind bringing before the task force in the interim would probably cost around $5,000 to get him here. I'm sure that would be true of any number of other people that I think it would be very important for us to consult with and hear from. So that's really the ongoing consideration in making this assessment and having the capability of going forward with all of these areas that we need to begin to examine.
Representative Westrum.
Thank you, Representative Hilty. That gives me some clarification. But in what you were saying, sounds like there might be more than one person for each of those two categories we're talking about, as needed or as we want different insights or expertise. Am I understanding you correctly? What Senator Solon sounded like was we would look for one person, expert in the electrical engineer field, one in the field of implementing this report.
Yeah. Representative Westrum, I was identifying two people I felt were essential for the committee to have. But as Representative Beard recommended, and as other topics come forward, I know that there will be other types of expert testimony that are going to be required too. Those were examples.
And, Madam Chair, that would be what's permitted under this motion we
yes.
may vote on? So then let me focus on this.
Actually, the motion is only to impose the assessment for the support of the task force. And I was trying to identify the reason why we need the assessment at this time.
So it's going to be just one general assessment. Madam Chair, the one that probably gets my concern a little more is this quote-unquote expert to implement this MKG report.
Not exactly. We would implement. The legislature would implement the MKG report. But we need somebody who has
some experience in the area of engineering or technology to be able to give us some guidance and some advice.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Westrom, members, the issues before the task force and certainly before the Energy Commission when it begins functioning in January go much beyond the implementation or consideration of the Climate Change Advisory Group recommendations. That's only one part of what we need to be concerned with as energy issues going forward in the state. I mean, the advisory group is concerned only with carbon emissions. Energy issues are much broader than that. And as far as I'm concerned, the recommendations that presumably the way this was intended in the first place come to us from the administration in their interpretation of the recommendations of the advisory group or matters for legislative committees other than this body. I think that it would be wrong to think that that would be the focus either of the Electric Energy Task Force as it's currently constituted or certainly of the Legislative Energy Commission. I hope it's clear that at least my intent in being the author of that bill and a presumptive co-chair is that it goes way beyond questions of simply greenhouse gas reductions. That's not in any way all that energy matters in the state are concerned with.
And Representative Westrom, I think it's not unlike the Pension Commission. And while we're not looking for any full-time staff, we do believe that the Energy Commission will grow in significance over time and that it will require much more consultation and perhaps some contractors with whom we can rely on for advice.
So Madam Chair, and maybe this addresses Westrom. My issue, one of my a major concern I would have, it wouldn't be a staff person to implement or to craft something. It would be more our commission or committee task force to call upon somebody as a resource. Does that imply that we may be able to call on somebody in addition to that first person hypothetically we're talking about? And my concern is, how do we call somebody an expert? Because I'm not sure your views, Representative Beard's views, Senator Anderson's views, or my views of this MKG report are that it's as valid as the next person might say. And so my concern is that we hear the whole picture and not just one side of the picture that might be tilted towards the report being gospel versus refuting some of the points that maybe aren't as scientifically sound as we may think they are today. Is that possible
always,
under this
we
proposal?
Always would have the ability to call on other types of advice, yes. Yes.
Okay, so I'm just concerned we aren't finding one quote-unquote expert under this motion and constraining ourselves to their point of view.
Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I strongly encourage support for what you're proposing. I think that as the originator of the concept of the Electrical Energy Task Force, which Linda Taylor, who was in House Research at that time, drafted the language, all I had is some ideas, and she put the words down. The concept originally anticipated that we would have expertise and staff that would be supportive of the overall activities. That did not happen. And I think one of the reasons that the Electrical Energy Task Force has not been on the cutting edge of some of these issues is because of lack of the continuity that we needed to have staff interface between House and Senate and to go out and research and to advise us as to who to bring in in the form of experts in order to give us the best advice and get us on the cutting edge. If we're going to lead Minnesota, we have to have the ability to bring those leaders before us on those particular topics so we can see what is in the public's best interest. That has not happened in the past because of the lack of the willingness of the legislature to financially support or at least give the authorization for the expenditures to be made to bring that kind of expertise before us. And so I'm glad to see this start. I'm really looking forward to your future commission. I think it's going in the right direction, and I just hope that you do not shy away from the need for the financial support that this body will need in order to bring those experts in here so you can make good, high-quality decisions in the future. And so I strongly support what you're doing.
Thank you, Representative Osmond. You articulated that very well, much better than I did. We appreciate it. Representative Hilty.
Madam Chair, I want to make a motion. Let me preface that by saying that I think that the actual motion will make clear what kind of progression is required here to accomplish what we intend. Madam Chair, I would move that the co-chairs of the Legislative Electric Energy Task Force request the Commissioner of Commerce and seek the approval of the Legislative Coordinating Commission to assess under Minnesota statutes Section 216C.051, Subdivision 6, $250,000 in fiscal year 2008 for the operations of the task force. Madam Chair, that would be the motion, and I would just reiterate to some of the concerns expressed by Representative Westrum that this motion is subject to the approval of the LCC. We will continue to have that discussion about what the intentions are, but I think that it is important, since this is the last meeting that we would have in this fiscal year, that the motion be approved at this time.
So that is the motion. To the motion, Representative Westrum.
Chair, Representative Hilty, $250,000, how does that compare to other years? And
Representative
Westrum. I'll just finish another part of the question, Madam Chair. It might speed up the answer. If the $250,000 is not used, it doesn't get assessed, or it gets returned to the ratepayers. Is that the process too?
No, that is the standard amount that it is assessed, and I believe it has been assessed on an annual basis.
And so, Madam Chair, does that pay for the task force costs of getting together, et cetera, et cetera? Or is it just dealing with these experts we're going to hire?
It is there for the support of the task force and the material that it's dealing with for the year.
Okay, so so it's kind of the whole budget. It's
yes.
Not just these experts that we talked
about. That's right.
Okay, that's where I thought this was an addition to those costs.
No, it is not. Okay. This is the annual budget.
Okay, so if there were trips that the task force needed to go on, or Yucca Mountain in the past has been visited by some, those types of expenditures are all part of this.
All of the work of the task force would come under this, yes. Senator Anderson, do you? Okay.
My question's been answered. Thank you.
So any further questions or comments about the motion? Then all those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. We have one last piece of business, and that is that the next meeting will be on August 5th. It's a Tuesday at 1 o'clock. And this will be focusing on the state's energy emergency plan. Any further discussion?
Where will
Senator Dillon?
Yeah, Madam Chair, it'll be August 5th at 1 o'clock. Where?
It will be here at the Capitol, but I don't know. Probably it may be in the state office building.
And Madam Chair, do you plan on having any future meetings on the need for nuclear power plants in this state?
We certainly can. We can take that under consideration, along with Representative Beard's recommendation also.
Madam Chair, I've actually
represented.
I have made that commitment to a number of interested parties, Senator Dill, and if it's not something that we can do in the auspices of the task force or the Energy Commission, which I think is totally appropriate, I would certainly be taking that up at least in my committee in the House and inviting a joint hearing with the appropriate committee in the Senate as well.
Any further comments?
Madam Chair.
Representative.
If I could mention, since this is the intended subject of the next meeting of the task force, there is available from the Department of Commerce, from the Office of Energy Security, a copy of the Energy Emergency Plan, which I would recommend to members that you get a copy of this. I'm sure Director Garvey can make that available to you in advance of the meeting so that you have a chance to look through it and see what the current state of our energy emergency planning is, and maybe we could have an interesting discussion of that in a short while.
Any further comments? Well, then the task force meeting is adjourned. Thank you. Have a good month.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, good to see you. Good.